Attention, patriots. Broadcasting from the Free Zones, Radio Free Redoubt begins in 5, 4, 3, 2...
Voice of the American Redoubt. This is the John Jacob Schmidt Show. I'm John Jacob Schmidt, your host. Once again, hope you guys had a blessed week. Hope that you were encouraged by that Trump speech at CPAC yesterday. That was amazing. I meant to grab some of the sound clips out of that, but I didn't have time. Tonight, we are going to do a three-segment show because I blew it. We had Stephen on from the founder and director at Alerts USA. We're going to have him back on next week to talk about the domestic issues because I had to pre-record the interview with him earlier today. And we were talking about Alerts USA and some great programs that he's offered for American Redoubt. Well, for Radio Free Redoubt listeners and Amron members, specifically with Amron in mind, with these alerts. So I lost the second half. I deleted it. I deleted the second half of our interview. I blew it. And so anyway, the first interview was great. Lots of great information, a lot on the international front and a little bit about what Alerts USA is. Really, really neat guy. And he's done a lot. I followed his stuff for years. So I'm going to do the news and commentary. And then we're going to do segment one, or segment two is going to be part one of the interview with him. I'll get a hold of him again this week so we can talk about domestic issues in one of the segments next week. And so in the third and final segment for this week, I want to address the Second Amendment issue and especially how it was triggered by this proposal that a so-called constitutional lawyer in Oregon is putting forth, saying that the Constitution doesn't give you the right to own nuclear weapons. He says he doesn't have a problem with handguns, but you shouldn't have nuclear weapons. So he's making the point that, well, there should be some limitations. You obviously can't have nuclear missiles. So that means that there can be limits put on what type of weapons you have. So he takes it all the way back to what he calls assault rifles. Anyway, failed logic. We're going to talk about that in segment three. So let's get down to the news and commentary. The news and commentary brought to you by the author Glenn Tate and the 299 Days book series, with all 10 audio books out as well. Very exciting. And don't forget, guys, we've got the Puget Sound Prepper Expo coming up on March 30th, Saturday. And I will be there. We've got a little, actually, they put together an audio piece for that, promoting that. So I'll play that here coming up. But let's see here. Oh, yeah. And don't forget, 2 weeks after that is the Northwest Preparedness Expo, April 13th and 14th over there in Liberty. Prosser, to be exact. But I want to talk about some issues going on in Jihad Watch, the Daily Digest. French prosecutors are calling for Le Pen. You know, it's a publication magazine. Wants them to stand trial for posting photos opposing the Islamic State. You thought it would stop with the defaming and deplatforming of foes of jihad terror? No. Soviet-style judgments of insanity and show trials are next. And what will come after that? The answer is clear enough. French prosecutors call for far-right leader Marine Le Pen to face trial over violent pictures of ISIS atrocities. You can read more about that on the link that we're going to provide in the highlights and resources posting. Another one out of Canada, a Muslim who said all Muslims should be killed, all non-Muslims should be killed. He was ordered to meet weekly with an imam for Islam instruction. On Thursday, He was sentenced to an additional 6 months, in addition to the time he has already served since his arrest in June 2016. He must also meet weekly with an imam for religious counseling. The order to meet with the imam is predicated on the assumption that jihad terrorism and the Islamic State. And of course, you can go on and read the rest of that article there. Very interesting, especially in light of this next article. In this video from UK, Muslim threatens Christian preacher and cops arrest the preacher for Islamophobia. This is in the UK. Britain is, of course, finished. They arrested him for Islamophobia. Muslim targets street preacher. The police arrest the Christian. This is an article that was over at CBN News. Britain was once the home of the world missions, but today it's increasingly hostile to the gospel. In the latest episode, London police are under fire for arresting a Christian who was apparently targeted by a Muslim, and the preacher gets arrested for Islamophobia. Insanity, isn't it? So let's talk about Canada. This is very interesting here. If you get arrested for, if you get charged for some type of hate crime in Canada, what they're redefining as hate crimes, you probably will not just be sentenced to, a part of your sentence. You have to just meet with your pastor. No, they're going to hammer you six ways from Sunday. And now, remember what I said about the coming social credit scores. We saw China. They began experimenting with social credit scores. And this is what's going to happen one day in the future. You're not going to be able to maybe get insurance. You're not going to be able to do business. You won't be able to get a credit card. Your bank will close your account because of your low social credit score. Well, now in Canada, police in Canada are tracking people's negative behavior in a risk database. The database includes detailed but not de-identified information about the people's lives culled from conversations between police, social services, health workers, and more. And this is from Motherboard Vice, a publication. So police, social services, and health workers in Canada are using shared databases to track the behavior of vulnerable people, including minors and people experiencing homelessness, with little oversight and often without consent. So documents obtained by Motherboard from Ontario's Ministry of Community Safety and Correctional Services through an access to information request show that at least two provinces, Ontario and Saskatchewan, maintain a risk-driven tracking database that is used to amass highly sensitive information about people's lives. So right now, it's just to see if the person uses drugs, if they've been a victim of an assault, or lives in a negative neighborhood. The risk-driven tracking database is part of a collaborative approach to policing called the Hub Model that partners cops, school staff, social workers, healthcare workers, and the provincial government. So very interesting, tracking discussions, your behavior, to put you in a negative behavior risk database. So yet again, this isn't your social credit score type of database yet, but we're starting to see this across the world and in different parts of the world, I should say. And in China, they already started that social credit scoring system. Well, now in Canada, the police are tracking people's negative behavior. Well, now it's just a matter of them defining what negative behavior is, isn't it? I'm going to go into a little more depth next week. I want to talk about the lieutenant governor in Idaho who posed with some three percenters wearing orange. They look like prison uniforms with angle imprinted across the front of those to stand for Todd Angle, who is really convicted in a politically motivated conviction for his involvement at Bundy Ranch. And they stood for a picture holding the three fingers up for three percenters. And she is being lambasted right now in the leftist news press. God bless her for standing with these guys. These guys are patriots. They're with the three percenters. Okay, now, the three percenters, if you don't know, the three percenters represents those who were willing to actually take up arms against the British during the Revolutionary War. And it is estimated that although probably a third of the colonists actually supported breaking off and having independence and forming their own country, actually only 3% of them were actually willing to join, like George Washington's militias and the others, to actually do something about it besides just wish for it. They actually were willing to take up arms and join the effort. And so that made up about 3% of those colonists who were supportive of this breakaway. That's the general conventional thinking. So this modern group of patriots who, for example, joined the Oath Keepers and militias and citizens and others, the folks who had joined together and formed these 3% groups of patriots said, we will stand by to make sure that the government doesn't oppress people, just like the founding fathers did. We represent that small amount of people that are willing to actually stand against tyranny, physically stand in the gap. So they call themselves three percenters. Well, they are patriots. They are standing for Todd Engel, convicted, politically motivated conviction, like several of those guys that were convicted for the Bundy Ranch incident. She's taking massive heat. This article says, oh, they're holding up, well, what has become known as a racist skinhead symbol or something. They're completely just twisting it. So I want to cover that more in depth next week. I'm going to bring more. I might even dedicate a segment to it. I'm not sure. But if you have the opportunity to, please send McGeechan. What's her first name? I don't have it right in front of me. The lieutenant governor. You can go to lgo.idaho.gov, LGO, Lieutenant Governor, lgo.idaho.gov, and find the direct email contact for her and say, let her know that you stand by her and support her for standing against injustice. And this was about. These guys are not terrorists. They're not homeland. They're not domestic terrorists. They are patriots. Of course, isn't that what the British called the patriots in the Revolutionary War? They called them terrorists, right? These guys aren't calling for violence. They're calling for standing in the gap, standing up for what's right, standing against tyranny. And that's exactly, and standing up for the rights, the individual rights of the people. And that's what this lieutenant governor believes the government should be doing. And it is what the government should be doing. So she stood with them for a photo op. She gave a heart-shaped symbol, put her hands together like the shape of a heart. Our heart's with you, Todd Engel, in prison. And we're going to fight against injustices. And the left has absolutely come unhinged because of that. There's a couple of articles here on the House Bill 203, Concealed Carry in Schools. That bill is currently in the State Affairs Committee's hands. So if your representative is on that committee, then be sure to call them and tell them to vote yes on that bill. Remember that it is important to follow how your representatives vote and not to make excuses for any bad votes that they cast. And, of course, that was an editorial that was posted over at Readout News. You can read that whole thing there. I concur with that, standing with those guys on that. Also, House Bill 17, the grocery tax credit. Very interesting article over there at Readout News. This brings up closes with an excellent point. The grocery tax credit has been a talking point in Idaho. I'm just going to read this to you from Redoubt News. This was written by Rocky Fehrenberg. So this grocery tax credit has been a talking point in Idaho for quite some time. HB 17 has passed both the House and the Senate. So most people are going, yay, finally. Well, the bill's also been signed into law by Governor Little. So next year, we'll see revisions in the grocery tax credit come into play. So they're very popular, these revisions. However, this person writes, I think that there is a much better process that we could use to achieve the same goal. The grocery tax credit is aimed at easing the tax burden on food items for Idaho residents. Sounds good, right? To better achieve this goal, the logical concept would be to lower the tax rate on food products or rid the state of the tax altogether, like actually they do in Washington State. They don't tax grocery items, but they want to give you a tax credit instead. So he says the first reason would be the interest-free loan that the government gets every year. Secondly, it remains in the best interest to convolute the laws, which artificially makes politicians specialists in their field. Unfortunately, the win, quote-unquote win, claimed here is really just a Kubaki theater. The main revision is the removal of the progression and the implementation of the grocery tax between 2008 and 2015. So the grocery tax credit is still the same. And this is what he closes with. I advise you to be wary of any bill that has had major controversy around it for years, then is randomly passed unanimously by both the House and the Senate and signed into law with no hiccups. That is a brilliant point. This grocery tax bill, they've been trying to get through for years. It always gets stopped up somewhere, or the governor vetoes it, or they can never get it passed. All of a sudden, everybody passes it at once. Red flags should be going up. So this is worth looking a little bit closer at for you folks that are paying attention to what's going on in Boise. I want to close out the news and commentary with this from rhinopack.org. Two stories, actually, from Stark Raving Mad. The Stark Raving Mad page at the Rhino Hunters of the Inland Northwest website, rhinopack.org. That's R-H-I-N-O, rhinopack.org. Here's an article that they focused in on, titling it Kill Cops. On the 1st of March, out of California, Davis, California, Joshua Clover, a professor of English and comparative literature at UC Davis, has called for the killing of police. Quote, he says, people think that cops need to be reformed. They need to be killed, close quote, is one of his more profound statements. He says, I am thankful that every living cop will one day be dead, some by their own hand, some by others, too many of old age. And, I mean, it's easier to shoot cops when their backs are turned, no, he says. This is just some of his statements. This is a professor. This, undoubtedly, making a living off of taxpayer-based grants and student loans and everything else, putting this kind of tripe out there. And he doesn't confine his radicalism to the classroom. In his recent book, Riot, Strike, Riot, The New Era of Uprisings, he catalogs the means by which class struggle for social justice can be achieved. This communist, he's a communist. He is a red communist through and through. One reviewer called his book a valuable guide for future antagonists in their struggle to ferment. It's actually foment, but they wrote ferment revolution. Most individuals would be fired for advocating murder. Many more would be fired for advocating revolution, but not at today's universities where radical left-wing professors are the norm. And President Trump started in the right direction yesterday when he said, these people, these conservatives that are, their free speech is stifled, he's going to put a policy in place, and he signed an executive order to begin pulling funding for universities who do not support First Amendment rights for conservative students or for all students. But it's the conservative students that are being shut down. So beautiful start. But this guy needs to go. FBI, you need to be looking at people like this that are talking about killing cops. All cops need to die. unreal. Stop looking at the patriots that are patriots in your investigations into domestic terror threats and start looking at this kind of stuff and the people that are listening to professors like this. Don't have children. The second story here from Stark Raving Mad, Democratic Socialist Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, a Democrat out of New York, has called for people to forego having children because of global warming. She says our planet is going to hit disaster if we don't turn this ship around. And so it's basically like there's a scientific consensus that the lives of children are going to be very difficult, stated Communist Cortex. Cortex has also predicted on numerous occasions the world will end in 12 years. Ms. Cortex conveniently ignores the fact that none of the dire predictions made by those who follow the global warming religion, I call it a cult, have come true. The snow predicted to be totally gone from New England by 2000 is still falling. Coastal cities along predicted to be underwater are still on dry land. And the ice-free Arctic is still frozen solid. Further, there is not now, nor was there ever, a scientific consensus, quote-unquote, about man-made global warming, like most lefty, quote-unquote, facts. It was and is fake news, made up out of thin air by globalist fascists and promoted by their legacy media acolytes. However, as wrong as occasional Cortex is about most things, RhinoPak believes she is correct this time. Leftists should defiantly not have children. Over time, it would solve a lot of problems. Don't forget to participate in the poll over at libertystate.org. What should be the official Liberty State rifle? The AR-15 is leading the way. This is Radio Free Redoubt. We'll be back right after this.
Hello, Liberty State Patriots. There have been two more counties that have held volunteer recruiting meetings this last week, and the Liberty State Committee would like to thank the efforts of Mary Ruth Edwards and her group in Benton County, and John Christina, Josh Beal, Caleb Collier, and Rob Chase from Spokane County for putting together such great events and bringing more volunteers into this effort. Mark your calendars for March 29th, Lexit Rally in Olympia, as we will be asking everyone from all the counties to attend. We will be having guest speakers from the Second Amendment groups, the leaders from other major groups that are now wanting to join the Liberty State effort as well. It is becoming more obvious by the day to everyone in Liberty State that Western Washington is headed the wrong direction and they are moving full speed ahead. People are shocked by the mind-numbing bills Western Washington is attempting to pass this session in the legislature, and the people in Liberty State are realizing just how important it is to divide from their lost agenda as soon as possible. We have nothing to lose and everything to gain, primarily restoring our power of the vote. But the landscape in Liberty State will not have property taxes, it will not overregulate businesses, agriculture, logging and mining. It will not have the Growth Management Act or any other unconstitutional government programs. Our Liberty State Constitution is going to be given to the volunteer leadership from each county to be voted on and amended if they choose. When they have voted on it, it will then be handed to the rest of the volunteers to vote on, and then it will be considered a completed Liberty State Constitution. Liberty-loving people are going to love this new state constitution. So all you groups, keep working hard and gathering more volunteers in your county groups. We would like to see each county group be at least 100 strong as we invite our elected officials to join us this year. You can join in on this awesome effort today by volunteering or by donating to the Liberty State effort and make a difference that will actually count. I'm Lady Liberty, and this is a public service announcement on behalf of Liberty State. Visit us at libertystate.org today.
All All right, we're back with segment two of The Voice of the American Redoubt. And segment two is brought to you by our friends at Selkirk Mountain Real Estate, helping patriots just like you get strategically relocated to the safe, to the free zones. In their case, they specifically help people get to the northernmost part of the panhandle of Idaho. Check them out, SelkirkMountainRealEstate.com. All right. Now, this next guest, I've been looking forward to bringing on for actually a couple of years, and I just finally got around to it. So we're gonna do that. But I want to just introduce you to a little bit of some of the work that he does. And I know many of you are familiar with Alerts USA and the Threat Journal. And here's a sample of what just came out yesterday.
This is an Alert USA Threat Journal National Situation Update for the week ending Saturday, January 12th, 2019. This week in security news, on seven occasions this week, Alert USA subscribers were notified via SMS messages to their mobile devices regarding safety and security matters. First up in this report, late Tuesday, Alert USA subscribers were some of the first in the U.S. to learn of the presence of hazmat and police vehicles at more than a dozen embassies and consulates in Australia. In this incident, 38 packages reported to have contained a light gray powder identified as asbestos had been sent to embassies and consulates across Melbourne, Canberra, and Sydney.
All right, so there's just a little bit of the beginning of that, and that's just one of the many components to the service that they've been offering since 2001. Alerts USA has been helping individuals, corporations, and government agencies monitor and protect against growing dangers in our world, regardless of their location, with flash notifications of significant threats and dangerous developments sent directly to their mobile devices and, of course, their emails as well. So from terror alerts to tsunami warnings, from nuclear power plant emergencies to infectious diseases and outbreaks, Alerts USA is the gold standard for up-to-the-minute notification of Homeland Security alerts and threat information. And I've been a follower of Alerts USA and a subscriber of the free service up until just recently of the Threat Journal. And so I'm really excited about this and the opportunity for the listeners, and especially the many members, the hundreds and thousands, really, of members of AMRON, to be able to learn more about this. I think it's really good for all of our situational awareness, since many of us are involved in disaster and civil defense communications, especially in a grid down situation. So we're all about getting timely information out that could affect others to help them make informed decisions. So it's an honor for me to bring on the founder of Alerts USA, Stephen Oxtokolnis. Thank you for being with us here at Radio Free Redoubt.
I very much appreciate the opportunity.
Okay, Alerts USA. A lot of us have seen it. It's been all over a lot of the websites that we follow. We've seen it come up. Many of us follow it. But for those who don't know, what is Alerts USA beyond your generic introduction that I just shared with them?
So we work very closely with the Department of Homeland Security, the Department of Justice, law enforcement agencies across the country, where we propagate to the mobile devices of counterterrorism professionals, first responders, corporate security departments, business travelers, average individuals. We will send to their mobile devices information about either emerging threats that are of a national significance or breaking developments. For instance, a truck racing down the promenade in Nice, France, which happened just a few years ago, we killed a bunch of people, or something similar happening in Times Square, or the bombing in the New York or the Manhattan bus terminal.
Yes.
Things like this, or major earthquakes, and in particular those taking place in coastal areas anywhere in the world above 6.0, and even more specific, those that trigger a tsunami.
Yes.
So we monitor this, all of these different types of events and threats on a global basis, and we will initially send to the subscribers of the service a 160-character text message to their mobile device, giving them a heads up, giving them the meat of what's happening. That is almost immediately followed with an email within which we're not limited to any character limitations, and so we can expand on it. And so, for instance, as you saw in this past week, the Islamic State put out a new propaganda poster which made threats against the aviation sector.
Yes.
And so we will flash out that that poster is available. We have access to expert-level Arabic translators who translated the Arabic message on there. We provide the translation, copy of that propaganda poster, everything that went out, so that everybody that's a subscriber, instantly everybody's aware of what's going on. And in turn, those stakeholders, for instance, those in federal law enforcement that are involved in aviation security, they're aware of a new threat, which gives them an increased level of situational awareness. And so this is the baseline operation of the company, and we've been in operation doing exactly this since 3 months following the events of 9/11.
Yes, I was hoping you would bring that up and talking about what was the impetus for this, the thing that made you say this needs to be handled, information needs to happen, and I'm going to do something about it. Talk about that.
So on the morning of 9/11, the first plane slams into the first tower. Nearly everyone in the second tower had no idea what had happened. And over the intercom system, everybody was told to return to their offices. Had this or a similar service been in place, at least our subscribers would have known that something, you know, serious had taken place other than just an explosion or fire in the adjacent building.
Sure.
And so myself and some friends within the intelligence community saw an opportunity there to fill that information vacuum. And that was actually what started the company, was the morning of 9/11 and the lack of accurate information that was getting out. Everything that wasn't visual that came through the mainstream media was highly distorted, slanted, and yes, so on. And so we have an emphasis on getting the information right. Yes. And getting it out fast. And invariably, most of the major mainstream media news outlets learn, they're all subscribers to our service, so they will often learn of breaking events from us as opposed to the opposite.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've seen this, well, every week, multiple times throughout the week. There are alerts that are coming out. And of course, you can see a summary of that, you know, at the end of each week. That's posted every Saturday, and we'll talk about this. Well, here, actually, we can talk about it now. It's, for example, the summary that I'm looking at that was just released yesterday is available for free. People can subscribe to this to get a summary of the significant news and the alerts that were put out. A lot happened this week surrounding Pakistan and India, with each side having fighter jets shot down, tensions extremely high, villages reportedly being evacuated on the border area. And this has been two countries that are nuclear powers, where things have been tense for years. And this conflagration, my goodness, I know that word and I can say it, but this situation is getting really tense. So let's talk about that. What do we have for latest developments, and how significant do you think that threat is to the average American?
The tensions between India and Pakistan, they're very significant, and they potentially have global ramifications if the tensions continue to grow. So last week, as we mentioned in a newsletter, Alert USA subscribers were some of the first people in the U.S. to learn that Indian jets, they were, I believe, 12 MiG-2000s that crossed into Pakistan airspace and carried out bombing missions on terror training camps in the northwest of the country near a town called Balakot. And then they returned back. The next day, Pakistan attempted to carry out bombing missions inside of India, but the Indian Air Force stood up. There was a massive dogfight over the border. One of the Indian jets and one of the Pakistan jets were shot down. The Indian pilot captured, who has since been returned, but the fighting in the Kashmir region up north is some of the worst that it's ever been in the history of that conflict. On both sides of the borders, they're building, rapidly building loads of bomb shelters all the way up and down the border for the populations there. And the big concern is that these are two nuclear armed nations that have previously gone to war. I believe 5 different times since the Indian subcontinent was divided by right. the Brits. And the problem comes in that Pakistan knows that they cannot stand up to India in a conventional war.
Right.
There's just such a large mismatch there. And so their military doctrine, which is published publicly, calls for early use of tactical nuclear weapons if a large engagement, a large conventional engagement breaks out. And they're, now, this isn't their wording, but it looks like they're going to suffer large defeat or the capital is in danger and so on. That's what their national military strategy calls for.
Right.
And this is just, you know, this is the big concern that within the defense and intelligence communities on the next use of nuclear weapons anywhere in the world between formal powers, this is likely the place that it's going to take place. And that in turn, they're so close to China that this will likely then involve or mean China gets involved in some way, even if it's just on a conventional level, which in turn, because of the partnerships between the U.S. and India, likely the U.S. would be getting involved then too. And this is how it mushrooms out from just being a regional issue to something much larger.
Yeah. Okay, so where are we right now with that? Does it seem like cooler heads are starting to prevail, or are they ramping up for larger operations?
There is a massive military buildup on both sides of the border. Matter of fact, just yesterday, Pakistan, there were large stretches of highway in different parts of the country that were closed down, and the Pakistan Air Force was practicing using them as runways. There's heavy artillery movement, tanks and so on, and troop movements on both sides of the border, stretching the entire length, not just up into Kashmir region. Pakistan has, in the last 48 hours, been closing and then reopening different portions of its airspace. So during when the conflict was primarily taking place earlier in the week, Pakistan completely closed off their airspace, which necessitated rerouting of air traffic either through China or down and over the Indian Ocean. And that in turn, there's a lot to, for instance, Vietnam, Cambodia, Laos, Thailand, all of the tourism and business travel that takes place through there in Europe, lots of those flights were being canceled or having to be significantly rerouted, adding hours to the trips because Pakistan closed off all of their airspace.
Right.
And so they're selectively opening it and closing it depending upon the needs. For any of the pilots out there, there's a regular stream of NOTAMs or notices to airmen that are being published about this particular area. And for your listeners, if they just go to, flightaware24.com and scroll over to that region of the world, they can actually see the air traffic patterns and the big void over Western India and most of Pakistan, and how the traffic patterns are being rerouted because there's still is tensions are still very high. And an added bonus is that India has elections this week.
Oh boy.
And so, and the people, they want action. And so this, it'll be interesting to see how they handle it in this particular thing. But again, still the fighting still continues up in Kashmir, and heavy shelling in both directions.
Wow. Okay. Well,
you know, and an interesting point I'll add to this is that this entire conflict that's been going on for decades now, while there is a religious component or a secular component to it, a sectarian component to it, when you peel away all of everything and so on, what's at the very core of this, these tensions between India and Pakistan is water. And the watershed coming out of the Kashmir, there's four rivers, primary rivers up there that flow from India's portion and into Pakistan. And a lot of that water is being diverted into Pakistan, or I'm sorry, into India. Both countries have growing populations. Both countries, they're agrarian societies, and so both countries desperately need the water to continue. And
that's very interesting because we've seen just in recent, you know, the last decade or two, how prevalent that is becoming. When you hear some of these reports that are coming out by these geostrategic analysts, they're saying water wars are going to be the next water is the next gold, you know, and the thing that people are going to be fighting over. So it's really interesting that that's a player. I didn't even I wasn't aware of that in this particular situation, but
most people
sense.
Have the belief that this is you know, fighting over some beautiful territory, mountain ranges, and all that stuff. It's the resource that comes out.
How often that is. Wow. Okay, so we'll continue to watch that. Thank you for keeping your sensors out there. That's obviously not the only thing going on, you know, in the world. What do you see as the other hot spots on the, I guess, the international front? And then, of course, we'll take a break here in just a little bit. And I want to get your take on where you see some of the threats emerging domestically for us. So in the rest of the world, what do we got going on that we need to be watching very closely?
Another global conflict zone outside of the U.S. that's well worth keeping an eye on and that we watch very closely is the South China Sea. China has historically laid claim to the South China Sea as being their territorial waters, but it was never really pushed heavily until they started finding oil and gas deposits. All of that takes place within the last 10 years. Now, you add on top of that China's navy. So in the north part of the China Sea, you have Hainan Island.
Yes.
On the south part of Hainan Island is there are at least two ballistic missile submarine bases there. And China's starting to field their own ballistic missile submarines now. And for them to have space to operate, stretch their legs, carry out their tests, and so on, they need control over that body of water. So there's an added reason that they're trying to dominate in the area there. The big challenge comes in for the global community in that about 70% of all of the goods that are carried on the high seas that travel between the Pacific and the Indian Ocean have to pass through the South China Sea.
Right.
And their attempts to institute the air defense identification zones and control the naval traffic and who passes through there and so on has significant potential for conflict. Adding to that, they're building artificial islands and carrying out drilling operations in the territorial waters of more than a dozen other countries.
Yes.
There. And all of this mixed together is why there's a major, for instance, military shift from what's taking place in the Middle East. There's a lot of assets that are moving now over time into the Western Pacific and the China Sea region because of the high potential for conflict there. And so, for instance, as odd as it may seem, the strengthening of U.S. ties with Vietnam and the strong potential for the U.S. to start having ships return to Cameron Bay, which is just is mind-blowing. But if you think about it, Hong Kong is no longer available to us.
Right.
The only other two major ports that we have access to there are in Japan and in Singapore.
Yeah, or and Taiwan. So, Taiwan plays into all this as well.
Oh, absolutely, it does. But the U.S. U.S. warships don't currently make port calls in Taiwan.
Okay.
And the tensions right now with the Philippine government and being able to, we still have military interactions with them and so on, but they are nothing compared to what they used to be.
Right.
And so we're forming up partnerships with a lot of the other nations that are in the region there in order to be able to allow us to increase the size of our footprint, which in turn is believed to at least slow the progress of China's actions in those areas.
Right. Now, how much do you think of President Trump's policies are influenced by this, the South China Sea potential, this conflict or this this kind of this rub, I guess, if you will, do you think that was very much a strategic part of his trip to Vietnam last week?
I'm certain that it was probably folded into the overall equation, and I'm certain that that all of this is, you know, and the reformation of the relationship there is really taking the Chinese a little bit by surprise.
Yeah.
But the issue itself is so large that it would bleed into many other issues. For instance, the trade issues. And
right.
Because the South China Sea issue is so large that taking sub-issues at the edges and using those as trade-offs in different types of negotiations, that whether or not it's, you know, dealing with automobiles or agricultural products and so on, I'm certain that all of this, the South China Sea issue is so massive and so important strategically for the U.S. and other Western nations that I'm sure it has influence in everything else that takes place.
So do you think this the South China Sea issue, have we seen an increase in, I guess, close calls? Or is that kind of even keel type of situation there?
It seems like every 2 months there's a new news story that comes out that either the U.S. does a freedom of navigation passage through. Well, they'll send like an Aegis destroyer or something like that.
Right.
That go and weave through the artificial islands, and China jump up and down, fire off diplomatic rockets. And
do some missile testing.
Close encounters of military aircraft that are flying through. And so we're both kind of poking at each other.
Yep. Playing the game. Same game we've been playing for decades. Absolutely.
You know, it's the same way that the Russians in the U.S., you know, we fly surveillance and intelligence missions at the edge of their airspace. And similarly, you regularly read that there's backfire bombers that, you know, that flew over the North Pole and down the coast of Alaska, and we're doing the exact same thing. And so, you know, they play their games, we play our games.
Absolutely. Yes, indeed. Well, good. This is good stuff. And I really appreciate all that you're doing to have your feelers out there and alerting us who subscribe to the most recent developments and things. I mean, just within minutes. Most of the information that we get from Alerts USA is minutes or more before we hear it from any other news agency. So it's really good, really timely. And also there's some stuff that could affect us right here at home. We'll talk about this when we come back from the break. So we are with Stephen Oxakolnis from Alerts USA, and we're going to talk about domestic when we get back, the domestic threat, some of the things we might need to be aware of, and more about how you can stay informed from Alerts USA and the Threat Journal when we come back. This is Radio Free Redoubt. Don't go away. Hi, I want to take a moment to let you all know about a great offer that will put up-to-the-minute intelligence and breaking news in your hands, often minutes or hours before you'll hear about it on the news or anywhere else. The director of Alerts USA and the editor of the Threat Journal, Steve Oxakolnis, is offering a discounted subscription to all of you as listeners of Radio Free Redoubt and members of AMRON. The Alerts USA subscription is normally $99 a year, but if you click on the Alerts USA banner at RadioFreeRedoubt.com or AMRON.com, that will take you through to a page where you can subscribe for just $75. Whether it's a natural disaster, active shooter, terrorist attack, or other rapidly developing security or emergency situation, you'll be among the first to know. Information is king, but accurate and timely information is priceless. I not only use Alerts USA, I count on it. However, if you're not able to pay for a subscription at this time, then you can still sign up for the free Threat Journal email subscription to get weekly intelligence briefs and stay in the know on what occurred in the previous days. Again, go to RadioFreeRedoubt.com or AMRON.com and click on the Alerts USA banner.
Hello folks, Shelby Gallagher here, wanting to let you know about a great event coming up, the Puget Sound Preparedness Expo. It's on Saturday, March 30th at the Baymont Inn and Suites in Bremerton, Washington.
It's going to be great. This is Glenn Tate here. We're going to have John Jacob Schmidt speaking, Representative Matt Shea, simulcast on 1400 AM KITZ Radio. Look for us on Facebook, Puget Sound Preparedness Expo 2019. Come on out and see us.
Renegade.
Right, this is the fourth, actually the third, but this is the final segment for episode 19-10. Thank you guys for your patience and your understanding. I don't think I've done that in a couple of years, I think, since I exited out of a file editing program where I was working on the show and putting all my little segments together and prepping all my breaks and everything and adding in pre-recorded stuff and cut out a segment of audio and closing out of it without saving it. That was sheesh. Well, anyway, that's okay. Steve is a very gracious guy. He's a great guy. And he's going to help us out by coming back on with this. But anyway, segment three here is brought to you by Works Holsters. Works LLC, custom-made Kydex holsters and magazine carriers made right here in the American Redoubt with a lifetime guarantee on all their products. And don't forget to check out the Liberty State line with the you get your choice of either the flag or the seal on your custom-made products from them. And portions of those proceeds go towards supporting Liberty State. Okay, yesterday on the show, on the terrestrial radio show through Liberty Broadcasting System, which is the American Christian Network affiliate. By the way, speaking of a Christian, ACN, you guys know I've been helping out Matt Shea with Patriot Radio, probably two or three out of four shows here for the last month. And I probably will be doing that also for the next month. So go and check those out at acn.cc. We'll see what we can do about getting those linked also so you can hear. Last Thursday, we interviewed Chris Ann Hall together. I kind of came in late and got invited to jump in. I wasn't really expecting to do that. But it was a really good conversation. And we're talking about, you know, of course, some of the anti-gun laws that are being put forward, the sheriffs that are standing their ground saying they're not going to enforce unconstitutional laws. And And those have been really, just really great, encouraging conversations. And then also talking about Liberty State. And that is really picking up momentum as well. So it's all really exciting stuff. But I just wanted to share that with you in case you guys are interested. It's always great to be on the radio with Matt. And we have a lot of fun together. So hopefully you'll enjoy those. But back on track. Yesterday on Liberty Broadcasting, I covered in segment two, I covered this article that was put out over at the Oregon Public Broadcasting, where they want to put a firearm. There is a retired constitutional lawyer. Thank God he's retired, because he doesn't understand the spirit and intent of the Constitution. Some of these guys, I think they become constitutional lawyers because they want to understand all of the inner workings of the Constitution so they can find weaknesses in it, so they can exploit those weaknesses and take us down a path away from the spirit and intent that the founding fathers had, and take us toward a globalist type of world type of thinking. So this guy's proposing, based on the premise that citizens can't own nuclear missiles, so it stands to reason that there should be some limitations. Well, it's about finding where those limitations are. So if a citizen cannot own a nuclear missile, now we've established that there are some things that citizens can't have. Well, what should those things be, and who decides that? Well, we should decide that as a society. Democracy, red flag should be raising now, because we as a people need to feel safe. And we can't feel safe with people running around with nuclear missiles, because they are destructive and capable of killing lots of people. So now that we've established that, we need to be able to remove the weapons from citizens that are capable of killing lots of people. Indiscriminately being able to kill many innocent men, women, and children. So let's just work our way down the list. Should they have artillery? Should they have mortars? Should they have... Well, finally, this guy decides that the magic line should be at what he calls assault rifles. Really, they're combat rifles, which I would argue, and I'm going to make the case here, that every American citizen should own a combat rifle for several reasons. Not the least of which, what I started off yesterday talking about, what our founding fathers had to say about the types of weapons that we should be able to have. And those are the sword and every terrible implement of the soldier are the birthright of every American citizen. And he identified the militia as every able-bodied citizen as being every male 16 to 60. And of course, I would argue that all citizens should have the sword and every terrible implement of the soldier at least accessible to them in some form or a fashion. I think the military might be a fair model for what type of firearms and weapons that citizens should have access to. I think that a well-regulated militia means you train regularly, which means you have a command structure. And just like in the military, look, the soldiers don't get to take their mortars home. They don't take their artillery home. And even at the beginning of this country, at the founding of our country, although they could have cannons in their front yards, and they often did, the ball and powder was kept in magazines. That is a stored, secure building and facility that in times of need, they would quickly be able to rally if they were threatened, if they faced some type of a threat, to go and secure that ball and powder, cannonballs and artillery and mortars and everything that they needed to be able to quickly assemble to repel a threat. The intent of the founding fathers was that an armed citizenry would be able to become an irresistible and overwhelming force, or at least equal matching force for any army that might choose to come against the American people, including God forbid if it was ever used against its own people, our own military. So how do you stand against your own military if all you have are muskets? Well, it's very clear. It should have, it should be, you know, what the modern soldier is carrying, which for us, every citizen should have a combat rifle. And I don't mean kept in a magazine somewhere in a community vault. That should be in the home, accessible. Your combat rifle is what you use. Let me back up. Your handgun is what you use for fighting your way to your rifle. If it's not within arm's reach, your rifle is what you use for fighting your way to the battery to get the mortar and artillery ammunition. Let's put it that way. So could it be under control? Of course. Could be under the commander, the XO, the executive officer of your local unit, your community militia. Could even be under the control of the sheriff with some checks and balances in case the sheriff goes bad. But here we are looking at, let's just look at combat rifles, first of all, alone, just combat rifles. So I'm going to take you to a website called a factual look at guns in America, how guns are being used by citizens each year, because we talk about how many people are killed by guns, and we'll get to that. But what they don't tell you is how many millions, at least a million times a year, it's argued, that firearms are used to defend life and property. That 270 million firearms, that's approximately the number of civilian firearms in America, 270 million firearms in civilian American hands. 200,000 times a year, women use a gun to defend against sexual abuse, and you want to take it away from them. 3 out of 5 polled felons say they won't mess with an armed victim. Let's talk about gun ownership versus crime. And I'm just taking this directly off the AmericanGunFacts.com website. Now, how do we know they're telling the truth? Well, there are multiple independent from one another organizations from Gun Owners of America, super fighters for our gun rights. Then there's the NRA, which I know a lot of people are frustrated with them, but they run a lot of statistics right now. They run a lot of statistics and they do lobbying and legislation, although they have compromised us right off to the edge of the cliff. I'm pretty frustrated with them myself, but the fact is they have some good, solid training programs and they have some really good, solid stats, and they are the largest and they have a lot of power. Thank goodness. So let's look at the highest gun ownership rates per 100 residents. For every 100 residents, the United States is number one in the world with 88.8 firearms for every 100 residents. That is astounding. Followed secondly by Yemen with 54.8 firearms per 100 residents. Switzerland then comes in at 45.7 firearms per 100 residents, and then finally Finland, 45.3, almost neck to neck with Switzerland, 45.3 firearms per 100 citizens. So let's look at the highest intentional homicide rates. Well, with all those guns in America being number one, 88 guns per 100 citizens, it's got to be the United States, right? Wrong. 91.6 is the highest per 100,000 residents. For every 100,000 residents, Honduras is number one with 91.6 homicides, intentional homicides. 69.2 is El Salvador. They're number two. Number three is Cote d'Ivoire, the Ivory Coast, with 56.9 homicides per 100,000 residents. And Jamaica is the world's number four with 52.2 intentional homicides for every 100,000 residents. So, where does the United States fall into this? With the number one firearm ownership rate, 88.8 firearms for every 100 residents. Look at the highest intentional homicide rate is, number 103. The United States is down at 103 on the list with only 4.8 intentional homicides per 100,000 residents. Interesting. Now, let's look at a United Kingdom case study. The most violent country in the European Union. Possession of handguns is illegal. They've had 2,034 violent crimes per 100,000 people in the UK. And of course, they got all their stats you can link through to all of their supporting documentation. There's 466 violent crimes per 100,000 people in the USA. 466 violent crimes per 100,000 people in the USA. That's quite a bit. But compared to UK, they can't not own firearms, 2,034 violent crimes in the UK versus 466. They have 400% higher violent crime rate per 100,000 people in the UK than we do in the US. Now, in the decade following Labour Party's election and banning of handguns in 1997, the number of recorded violent attacks soared by 77% to 1.2 million in 07, or more than two attacks every minute. Kitchen knives are being used in as many as half of all stabbings in the United Kingdom and has prompted a group of doctors to call for a ban on long pointed kitchen knives. How well do you think that's going to work out? So let's talk about concealed carry in America. An analysis of the FBI crime statistics found that states that adopted concealed carry laws reduced murders by 8.5%. It reduced rape by 5%. It reduced aggravated assaults by 7%. It reduced robberies by 3%. With just one exception, every public mass shooting in the USA since 1950 has taken place where citizens are banned from carrying handguns or guns at all. Despite strict gun control regulations, Europe has had three of the worst six school shootings. Isn't that interesting? Now, let's argue that, maybe guns do help deter groups to fight crime, but they should only be in the hands of trained professionals. The police are the only ones that should have firearms. Unless you're in Massachusetts, where as soon as you get off duty, you have to turn it in because it's unlawful for any citizen to be in possession of a high-capacity magazine, except they've made an exception for police officers who are on duty and only when you are on duty. But I believe I'm pretty sure it was Massachusetts. But does it really matter? It was in New Europe somewhere. Let's look at the statistics. How many police officers are there? Well, there's 794,300, less than a million. There are little over 750,000 total police officers, apparently, in the United States. How many gun-owning citizens? 80 million. Estimated. 80 million gun-owning citizens. Well, the error rate in police shootings, 11% error rate with police officers, only a 2% error rate with civilians. Average deaths of a shooting rampage stopped by police, 14.3 deaths average, or how many people are killed on a shooting rampage where a police officer stopped the shooter. In each of those shootings, an average of 14.3 people were killed by the shooter. The average deaths of a shooting rampage incident where a citizen stopped the shooter, 2.3 persons on average died. So when police officers stopped the bad guy, the bad guy's already taken out 14.3 people. When a civilian, somebody already on scene who's armed, stops only 2.3%, only 2.3 persons are killed. There are 606 criminals killed each year by the police. There are 1,527 criminals killed each year by armed citizens. In 1982, Kennesaw, Georgia passed a law requiring heads of households to keep at least one firearm in the house. The residential burglary rate subsequently dropped 89% in Kennesaw, compared to just 10.4% drop in Georgia as a whole. Today, the violent crime rate in Kennesaw is still 85% lower than Georgia's or the national average. There was an 89% drop in burglaries after the mandatory gun law. But see, the sickos on the left want to have you believe that more guns actually increase burglaries because they know that this is a well-armed community, so burglars are going to break in to steal those guns so they can sell them at pawn shops. But the opposite is actually true. 89% drop in burglaries after a mandatory gun law was passed, and that law was passed basically in tongue-in-cheek. They're really not going to throw anybody in jail because they didn't comply with this ordinance and actually go out and buy a gun, but it had the desired effect on the crime. Isn't that something? So, anyway, I wanted to cover those things. I want to encourage you guys to go to American Gun Facts and read these for yourselves. And there's more. There's a lot more statistics. You can drill down as deep into all of these resources and supporting documentation and studies and research papers and everything else that they use to reference these crime statistics and firearm statistics. But these combat rifles are used in very, very few of these incidences. It's hardly even, it's so fractional. And I had all that stuff pulled up in the notes from, for yesterday's show. I was going to talk about that. But you guys know not to buy into the lies. You know that they're going to keep lying, but that's okay. You do not allow yourselves to become disarmed, because the Founding Fathers told us the reason why we should never give up our ability to protect life, liberty, and property. And their primary reason was to stand against tyranny. And I was talking to some folks this week. We're talking about the Bundy Ranch incident, where that was a righteous situation where citizens, three percenters, Oath Keepers, militia, and other citizens all band together and joined together armed. And they stood against tyranny, and the tyrants backed down. The Founding Fathers would have approved of the way the Patriots responded during the Bundy Ranch situation. And guess what? Nobody got shot. No shots were fired by the grace of God. And there were federal agents who were acting unlawfully and who were also, they had unarmed citizens in their crosshairs. They had snipers who were glassing citizens who were carrying signs. If a citizen was looking through a sniper rifle at the BLM agents, well, that's aggravated assault. That's threat. That's a threat. But the standard is different. But it shouldn't be. The law applies equally to everyone. You can't say, oh, it was under the color of authority. That's a misuse of if you want to call it a doctrine, of operating under the color of authority, which is codified and it's very clear. It's not carte blanche to do whatever you think you need, whatever. It doesn't give you carte blanche to break the law because you're acting under the color of authority. You're still under the law. I would like to see investigations, serious investigations into the unlawful acts of those who were operating under the color of authority in a way that was unlawful, instead of looking at the citizens who did the right thing. Citizens don't always do the right thing. Police officers don't always do the right thing. We're pro-law enforcement. But when they step out of line and they act unlawfully, they should be held accountable. And when citizens break the law, they should be held accountable. Even if they're a patriot and they break the law, they should be held accountable. But then there's the fine line. The patriot standing against the BLM agents, both armed, each declaring that the other is acting unlawfully. I think that as we go into the future, it's going to require an incredible amount of restraint, but courage as well, and wisdom and discernment. And I think that's what we need to be praying for, because we don't want any harm to come to anyone. But you also have to be willing to stand against tyranny. How many of us grew up getting in fights with the bully, standing up for the one that was getting beat up by the bully? That's still in many of us. That toxic masculinity. Or some of us understand that sometimes, even though you've done everything you can to avoid it, there is no other solution than violence. Of course, it should always be as a last resort, but sometimes the bully who's beaten the snot out of some poor kid, nothing's going to make him stop except force. And that's for anybody acting as an oppressor. So, as citizens who are God-fearing, righteous, moral, law-abiding citizens who want to stand in defense of liberty in the future, the way that this divide is happening in our country, how we're becoming balkanized, divided, and those that are against those who stand for American traditional heritage and values, they're becoming increasingly violent. They're saying what they are going to do. They're projecting their intentions as becoming increasingly hostile communist revolutionary fighters. This is not the time. This is not the time, if ever there was a time, for Americans to consider allowing themselves to be disarmed. This is not the time. And we'll follow up with more of this. But this failed logic of this professor, so-called constitutional attorney, who's drafting this legislation for Oregon to consider banning and confiscating combat rifles. It's just the beginning of this type of mindset. So never give them up. You can never allow yourselves to be disarmed. And this is what people who are fleeing failed socio-political economic countries are coming to America, and they're warning us, do not ever allow yourself to be disarmed. You must maintain the ability to defend your lives, your families, and your communities, because bad guys come. Roving bands of street thugs and gangs come, and they take what they want, they do what they want, they hurt who they want. And if you allow yourselves to be disarmed, you're powerless to do anything about it. And in some cases, in many cases around the world, some of those bad guys and roving gangs who came from one village taking what they want, doing what they want, and hurting who they want, they were wearing uniforms, acting under the color of authority, and the people were absolutely helpless. And most of those bad guys, they don't get caught up in the net after the conflict is over and stand and are held accountable for it. They're long gone. So now's the time, if you don't have one, to get yourself a combat rifle for every member of your family, if you don't already. 14 magazines and a minimum of 1,000 rounds of ammunition for each one. And start training. Take a training course and become proficient with it. And you don't fret. You don't worry. It's an insurance policy. You'll probably never need it. You'll enjoy it as a hobby, and that's it. Hopefully. That's our hope and our prayer. But if you don't have a sword, sell your cloak and get one. This is John Jacob Schmidt, and you've been listening to the Voice of the American Redoubt. Good night.